Punishing local houses for not being quick enough to surrender won't help. They walked in silence for a bit and stopped at the edge of the water, arms still linked. "Walk you home?" asked Lieutenant Skyatt. Lieutenant On didn't answer but looked away over the water, still angry. The green skylights in the temple's slanted roof shone, and light poured out the open doors onto the plaza and reflected on the water. This was a season of nightly vigils. Lieutenant Skyatt said with an apologetic half-smile, "I've upset you. Let me make it up to you." "Sure," said Lieutenant On, with a small sigh. She never could resist Lieutenant Skyatt, and indeed, there was no real reason to do so. They turned and walked along the water's edge. "What's the difference?" Lieutenant On said, so quietly it didn't seem like a break in the silence. "Between citizens and non-citizens."
"One is civilized," said Lieutenant Skyatt with a laugh, "and the other isn't."
The joke only made sense in Radchai. Citizen and civilized are the same word. To be Radchai is to be civilized. So in the moment the Lord of Mianai bestowed citizenship on the Shasernans, in that very instant, they became civilized. The sentence was a circular one. The question Lieutenant On was asking is a difficult one in that language. I mean, one day your Issas are shooting people for failing to speak respectfully enough. Don't tell me it didn't happen, because I know it did, and worse. And it doesn't matter because they're not Radchai, not civilized. Lieutenant On had switched momentarily into the bit of the local Orzian language she knew, because the Radchai words refused to let her mean what she wished to say. "And any measures are justified in the name of civilization." "Well," said Lieutenant Skyatt, "it was effective, you have to admit. Everyone speaks very respectfully to us these days." Lieutenant On was silent, unamused. "What brought this on?" Lieutenant On told her about her conversation with the head priest the day before. "Ah, well, you didn't protest at the time. What good would it have done?"
"Absolutely none," answered Lieutenant Skyatt. "But that's not why you didn't. Besides, even if ancillaries don't beat people or take bribes or rape or shoot people out of pique, those people human troops shot, 100 years ago, they'd have been stored in suspension for future use as ancillary segments. Do you know how many we still have stockpiled? Justice of Torin's holds will be full of ancillaries for the next 1,000,000 years, if not longer. Those people are effectively dead, so what's the difference? And you don't like me saying that, but here's the truth. Luxury always comes at someone else's expense. One of the many advantages of civilization is that one doesn't generally have to see that if one doesn't wish. You're free to enjoy its benefits without troubling your conscience."
"It doesn't trouble yours?" Lieutenant Skyatt laughed gaily, as though they were discussing something completely different, a game of counters or a good tea shop.
"When you grow up knowing that you deserve to be on top, that the lesser houses exist to serve your house's glorious destiny, you take such things for granted. You're born assuming that someone else is paying the cost of your life. It's just the way things are. What happens during annexation? It's a difference of degree, not a difference of kind."
"It doesn't seem that way to me," answered Lieutenant On, short and bitter.
"No, of course it doesn't," answered Lieutenant Skyatt, her voice kinder. I'm quite sure she genuinely liked Lieutenant On. I know that Lieutenant On liked her, even if Lieutenant Skyatt sometimes said things that upset her, like this evening. Your family has been paying some of that cost, however small. Maybe that makes it easier to sympathize with whoever might be paying for you. And I'm sure it's hard not to think of what your own ancestors went through when they were annexed. Your ancestors were never annexed. Lieutenant Ahn's voice was biting. Well, some of them probably were, admitted Lieutenant Skyot. But they're not in the official genealogy. She stopped, pulling Lieutenant Ahn to a halt beside her. Ahn, my good friend, don't trouble yourself over things you can't help. Things are as they are. You have nothing to reproach yourself with. You've just said we all do. That wasn't what I said. Lieutenant Skyot's voice was gentle. But you'll take it that way all the same, won't you? Listen, life will be better here because we're here. It already is, not just for the people here, but for those who were transported. And even for Jen Shinnen, even though just now she's preoccupied with her own resentment at no longer being the highest authority in Oars. She'll come around in time, they all will. And the dead? Are dead. No use fretting over them. Chapter 5. When Savardin woke, she was fidgety and irritable. She asked me twice who I was and complained three times that my answer, which was a lie in any event, conveyed no meaningful information to her.
I don't know anyone named Breck. I've never seen you before in my life. Where am I?
Nowhere with a name.
You're on Nilt.
She drew a blanket around her bare shoulders and then, sulkily, shoved it off again and folded her arms across her chest.
I've never even heard of Nilt. How did I end up here?
I have no idea. I set the food I was holding down on the floor in front of her. She reached for the blanket again.
I don't want that.
I gestured my indifference. I had eaten and rested while she slept. Does this happen to you often?
What?
Waking up and finding you don't know where you are, who you're with, or how you got there? She fidgeted the blanket on and off again and rubbed her arms and wrists together.
A couple of times.
I'm Breck, from the Gerentate. I had already told her, but I knew she would ask me again. I found you 2 days ago in front of a tavern. I don't know how you got there. You would have died if I'd left you. I'm sorry if that's what you wanted. For some reason that angered her.
How very charming you are, Breck from the Gerentate.
She sneered slightly as she said it. It was mildly, irrationally surprising to hear that tone from her, naked and disheveled as she was, and not in uniform. That tone made me angry. I knew very precisely why I was angry, and knew as well that if I dared to explain my anger to Savardin, she would respond with nothing but contempt, and that made me even angrier. I held my face in the neutral, slightly interested expression I had used with her from the moment she'd awakened, and made the same indifferent gesture I had made moments before. I had been the first ship Savardin ever served on. She'd arrived fresh out of training, 17 years old, plunged straight into the tail end of an annexation. In a tunnel carved through red-brown stone, under the surface of a small moon, she had been ordered to guard a line of prisoners, 19 of them, crouched naked and shivering along the chill passageway, waiting to be evaluated. Actually, I was doing the guarding. 7 of me ranged along the corridor, weapons ready. Savardin, so young then, still slight, dark hair, brown skin, and brown eyes unremarkable, unlike the aristocratic lines of her face, including a nose she hadn't quite grown into yet. Nervous, yes, left in charge here just days after arriving, but also proud of herself and her sudden, small authority. Proud of that dark brown uniform jacket, trousers, and gloves, that lieutenant's insignia. And, I thought, a tiny bit too excited at holding an actual gun in what certainly wasn't a training exercise. One of the people along the wall, broad-shouldered, muscled, cradling a broken arm against her torso, wept noisily, moaning each exhale, gasping every inhale. She knew, everyone in this line knew, that they would either be stored for future use as ancillaries, like the ancillaries of mine that stood before them even now, identities gone, bodies, appendages to a Rodchai warship, or else they would be disposed of. Savardin, pacing importantly up and down the line, grew more irritated with his piteous captive's every convulsive breath, until finally she halted in front of her.
Otter's tits! Stop that noise!
Small movements of Savardin's arm muscles told me she was about to raise her weapon. No one would have cared if she'd taken the butt of her gun and beaten the prisoner senseless. No one would have cared if she'd shot the prisoner in the head, so long as no vital equipment was damaged in the process. Human bodies to make into ancillaries weren't exactly a scarce resource. I stepped in front of her. "Lieutenant," I said, flat and toneless, "the tea you asked for is ready." Actually, it had been ready 5 minutes before, but I'd said nothing, held it in reserve. In the readings coming from that terribly young Lieutenant Savardin, I saw startlement, frustration, anger, irritation.
"That was 15 minutes ago," she snapped.
I didn't answer. Behind me, the prisoner still sobbed and moaned.
"Can't you shut her up?"
"I'll do my best, Lieutenant," I said, though I knew there was only one way to really do that. Only one thing that would silence that captive's grief. The newly minted Lieutenant Savardin seemed unaware of that. 21 years after arriving on Justice of Torin, just over 1,000 years before I found her in the snow, Savardin was senior-esque lieutenant. 38, still quite young by Rodchai standards. A citizen could live some 200 years. Her last day, she sat drinking tea on her bunk in her quarters, 3 meters by 2 meters by 2, white-walled, severely neat. She was grown into that aristocratic nose by now, grown into herself, no longer awkward or unsure. Beside her on the tightly made-up bunk sat the Esk Decade's most junior lieutenant, arrived just weeks ago, a sort of cousin of Savardin's, though from another house. Taller than Savardin had been at that age, broader, a bit more graceful. Mostly. Nervous at being asked to confer in private here with a senior lieutenant, cousin or no, but concealing it. Savardin said to her,
"You want to be careful, Lieutenant, who you favor with your attentions."
The very young lieutenant frowned, embarrassed, realizing suddenly what this was about.
"You know who I mean,"
continued Savardin, and I knew too. One of the other Esk lieutenants had definitely noticed when the very young lieutenant had come on board, had been slowly, discreetly, sounding out the possibility of the very young lieutenant perhaps noticing her back. But not so discreetly that Savardin hadn't seen it. In fact, the entire decade room had seen it, and seen as well the very young lieutenant's intrigued response.
"I know who you mean," said the very young lieutenant, indignant. "But I don't see why..."
"Ah," said Savardin, sharp and peremptory.
"You think it's harmless fun."
"Well, it would probably be fun." Savardin had slept with the lieutenant in question herself at one point, and knew whereof she spoke.
"But it wouldn't be harmless.
She's a good enough officer, but her house is very provincial. If she weren't senior to you, there would be no problem.